not just about the disease, but because now, fast forward again, in 2013, after this group was formed, we realized that this drug was well on its way to getting approval, or we hoped, and that there had been drug trials, and it is the only current treatment available. So we definitely wanted families to know that it was there and to be a bit of a vehicle to make sure that they could get access to the drug, or at least to information, so that their medical professionals could try and help them. Because that's the other thing. As much as it's a patient's not knowing, the larger issue is a lot of medical professionals don't know. And even if they know what it is, they don't know what to do. Because like me, there's no treatment for me. I don't qualify for the drug because I don't have a childhood form. And they don't really know what the drug would do for me as an adult. If I were in an extreme case, there are adults that are currently on the drug just because of the level of pain and the amount of fracturing they have. So they have been allowed to be on the drug, but they're the rare case. Most adults in Canada anyway are not. And so that being said, we wanted to make sure that people had information and that if it was available, that we could help other people and medical professionals understand what was available. So yeah, so that's kind of my story. And you asked about my family, like how did they feel about it? And of course, they were frustrated too. And my mom, after we figured out that this was in fact what was linking all this other pain. So this started, say, when I was 25. It wasn't till I was already a mom and I was in my early 40s before we actually diagnosed, before it was actually diagnosed. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
And my mom, I know it was kind of upsetting because she goes, well, we sort of knew and we gave it to you. Like, but we didn't know. And all this time, right? So I think as a mom and, you know, you're not able to help. And then even when we found out what it was, there wasn't much we could do about it.
Yeah.
So very frustrating. So anyway, fast forward, as I said, to where we are now, where there is a patient advocacy group that has grown. So Debbie Tyfer is still the president, and she's now the president of Soft Bones Canada. And she asked for help. And in terms of getting involved in the group, there was a meeting on the phone, and these are patients all across Canada who, the very few people that she knew who had it, she invited us all to be on a teleconference.
Oh, nice.
And she explained what she wanted to do, and she wondered if anybody else would kind of rise to the challenge and help do it.
Mm-hmm.
So she lives currently in Alberta, and another woman who stepped up, Lisa McGuffin, she lives in Manitoba, and I live in Ontario. And the three of us were the ones who said, okay, we'd like to help. And whether we were equipped or not, we decided nobody else was going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the truth, right? Like anything, you need willing victims to become volunteers.
Yes.
And so we, the three of us said, yeah, we'll do it. And luckily, Debbie has a lot of understanding and an incredible amount of perseverance. She takes care of a lot of the administrative legal stuff, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm the director of education and events. That's sort of my background, is education. And Lisa is a nurse. And so she was sort of patient care is her thing. And we now have a new director whose name is Linda. And she's been instrumental in helping transform us just in terms of helping with administration and ideas. And again, some fresh a fresh face at Soft Bones Canada. So yeah, we've had, it's been a lot of work because as a nonprofit, especially we don't live near each other. All of our meetings were across multiple provinces and time zones, and we have to be on the phone for hours trying to, you know, go through things. But it's been, we all have the disease ourselves or have children who do. And so it's a labor of necessity as much as a labor of love, because we understand the frustration, and we've all experienced what I did, which was there was no information. I couldn't find what I needed when I needed it. And for a lot of these families, especially for those most affected, so if you're a parent and you have a child who's born with this and you don't know what to do, it is a horrible, awful thing to feel so out of touch and out of answers and out of knowledge about what you're going to do to help your kids. So if we can stop even a moment of that worry and that, you know, concern and lack of understanding, then that's what we're here to do. And that's what we say. Like, even if we've only helped one family, which I hope we've helped more than that every year. But I said, even if it's one new family who is put, their mind is put at ease, or we can put them in touch with a medical professional in their area. Mm-hmm. That's another goal of ours, is to make sure that people know who in their area can help them.
Oh, it's very interesting. Yeah.
Thank you.
So did you want to say a little bit more about why it is so difficult to diagnose the HPP?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, the symptoms and the severity are so varied that it can be a challenge for any medical professional to even realize that it might be hypophosphatasia, even if they're aware of it. But many don't even know what hypophosphatasia is. And so that's where the patient has to kind of become their advocate and make sure they know what to tell the doctor, or what to tell mm-hmm. the doctor not to do, right, mm-hmm. as the case might be. So anyway, to make a reliable diagnosis, it can be made using the patient's history, medical history, radiographic changes, so skeletal, you know, changes, and physical findings. And then you look at those things, but you can also do a blood test. And that looks at this alkaline phosphatase level, or ALK-phos level. And if it is low, then that is an indicator that it's probably hypophosphatasia. Mm. So for me, knowing that my teeth fell out early, I was having muscle and joint pain, and the fact that I have a very low ALK-phos level, those were the markers. That's really all they needed to say, yeah, that's what it is. Mm. So easily done, but unfortunately, we don't screen for low. If it's high, then they'll flag it when you've had a blood test. But if it's low, they don't flag that. So you may never know on regular routine stuff that this is even an issue. So anyway, it's fairly simple. There's more to it than that. If you really want to get into the genetics and which gene has mutated and, you know, who did you get it from and all those things, there's genetic testing that can be done. Mm-hmm. After I had my blood test, there was another test that they did for me. They checked what the short form is, a PEA level. And it's like a substrate in the urine, actually, that told them another tale, which is, yep, my body overproduces a certain thing. And there's three levels like that. One is PEA. And that, again, just confirmed, even without genetic testing, that, yeah, this is what it is. So mm-hmm. it's not super invasive. You don't have to have, you know, a huge test. It's not overly expensive to try and diagnose. You just have to know to look for it.
Mm-hmm. Is there treatment for it?
Well, the good news is that there is a drug that is available, and it has only recently become available in Canada. It's quite a journey, actually, and I've learned a lot, more than I ever thought I would, about drugs and how they get passed here in Canada and so on. In 2015, the Food and Drug Administration approved Strensiq, which is also called Asfatase Alpha. And it's the first approved medical treatment for perinatal, infantile, and juvenile onset HPP. So for those really, for the young children. Mm-hmm. Patients of all ages with this pediatric onset HPP are eligible for treatment. It's a bone-targeted enzyme replacement therapy, they call it, or an ERT. And it's given through needles. So there is one drug treatment. It is super expensive. In fact, I believe it's being touted as the most expensive drug currently on the market in Canada. Mm-hmm. They estimate that it would cost about $1 million per patient per year. So you can imagine that's pretty prohibitive. Debbie has, well, in my mind, she's famous for saying that what's worse, you know, being in the desert and having nothing to drink, or being in the desert and there's a glass of water, but you can't drink it. You can't access it. So this was a big thing that doctors and people that were connected with hypophosphatasia really wanted this access for people, because we can see what it can do. It has transformed these kids' lives. I met a boy who had this. He was diagnosed as a young boy, and they were afraid he wouldn't live. And he is running and jumping, and he is quote unquote normal, you know, and he has no issues. And he has to take needles, and it's not comfortable, and there are some issues, you know, at the needle site and stuff like that. But he's alive, and his parents were moments, minutes, hours from pulling him off of life support, because they had no way to treat what he had, and he couldn't sustain life. And then he got access to the drug, and he became one of the trial patients. So and I can picture him in my mind, to think that he's alive. It's amazing. And so we definitely wanted to push for families to be able to access it. So there is one drug. Now, unfortunately, it's not available to every age group at every stage yet. As an adult, for example, it's not appropriate for me to take it. They wouldn't approve me yet. Mm-hmm. Not in Canada. In other parts of the world, they have for some adults. But that being said, there is a drug. And with that, there's hope that there may be others that come along and are going to help patients. And that's the wonderful thing about science, right? It continues and it grows and we learn more. And our hope is that we'll be along for the ride and that there will be new treatments and more patients will find that relief and it will become something that is treatable for all. So that's our lofty goal at this point. And all we do is share information. We're not the doctors. Mm-hmm. So we just keep hoping that they're going to be able to find more. But the rest of the patients, as much as there is one drug, and as I said, we're hopeful that there will be others, other treatments are directed toward the specific symptoms and the complications that arise because of the symptoms that they're having. Mm-hmm. So it might require a coordinated effort. And that's certainly the case with me, whether it be pediatricians, orthopedic surgeons, dental specialists, pain management specialists, and other healthcare professionals that kind of have to work together in order to come up with a plan for treatment. Because again, like I said, it's not just one system of the body necessarily. Mm-hmm. There's non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which is like they call them NSAIDs, that might treat the bone and joint pain. So it's a pain reliever, really. But those anti-inflammatory drugs tend to be the ones that offer the most relief for the patients that we've spoken to. And I know that that's the case for me as well. Mm-hmm. But given in excess, right, any drugs can sometimes harm other systems. So we always want to be careful that we're not overdoing any one thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, working with your family doctors and your other healthcare professionals, you have to decide what's appropriate for you. But that regular dental care is a must. And we, all of us, the people that I've spoken to who have hypophosphatasia, that is not only probably the number one symptom, but that tends to be the thing that is so expensive, as you know, mm-hmm. right? Dealing with dental issues, but it's lifelong issues and you need to keep on that care. Otherwise, you lose your teeth and that has its own consequences, mm-hmm. right?